All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall, and for the first time in over a week, I am joined by my co-host, Chris Thornton, who you can follow on Twitter, at Misto Christopho. Chris, how was your getaway from Locked On Jaguars and all responsibilities?
It was fantastic, and I wish I could live in the mountains forever.
Well, did you suffer any injuries skiing like you were telling me?
I did not. If anything, I got stronger.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. And hopefully your takes got stronger as well, because we got some takes for you today over the weekend. According to everyone outside of Jacksonville, Nick Foles is absolutely expected to sign a multi-year deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars, despite free agency being 9 days away, and that players and agents are not allowed to be talking to teams and negotiating deals whatsoever. Take it to the bank, according to Philadelphia media and Adam Schefter and all the people at ESPN. He's doing it.
Collusion.
Yay. Yeah, collusion, right? That's totally going to – if Nick Foles – no one's talking about this right now. If Nick Foles signs on March 13th, there's absolutely going to be an investigation into the process from the NFL, right?
Yeah, I'm sure, but I mean – I feel like there's collusion all the time because you have this Flacco deal that
right.
that was agreed upon in the technically past the no trade deadline or whatever. So wasn't that in the dead part of the season, which is like no man's land?
It was, but the thing is that had nothing to do with the players and agents. That's so fair. I think something can happen with that, but it's not as serious as a player's camp negotiating with a team. You know? So I'm sure there will be some sort of investigation into this if this is what happens. But obviously, like, all signs are pointing to this happening, and that's great. Like, if it happens, I guess that's fine.
For the right price.
As long as he's not overly expensive. But I am skeptical of if this is set in stone just yet because of how far away it is. Because of conflicting reports, Les Bowen, the guy that broke this from Philly.com, said, "No other teams have any interest in Foles as things stand. Jacksonville's the only team doing this." Ian Rappaport last night said that there are multiple teams that'll be interested and that he should be going for at least $20 million a year. And I don't think Jacksonville would pay him get into a bidding war getting into the 20s. I think that it's going to be somewhere 18-ish million dollars a year on a rather shorter-term deal, maybe 3 years, something like that, if this is what ends up being the case. But there just seems to be so much going on about this, like, without any legit confirmation. And what's funny is Jacksonville media is certainly talking about this. No one here has confirmed that they've heard the same things. Only Philadelphia people and ESPN people are saying that this is what they hear, but there's nothing set in stone. This isn't how Tom Coughlin and the Jaguars work. Info doesn't leak like this. Like, it's odd to me. It's odd to draw the conclusion so quickly.
And yeah, like you said, that this is not how Jacksonville operates. So could be a bunch of smoke screens. It could be legit. It wouldn't surprise me if it was legit at the end of the day, but just granted it's only been a year, but under the Tom Coughlin era, this stuff, like, big stuff like this, like, nobody knew that Andrew Norwell was going to be going to Jacksonville until midnight when Schefter dropped it, saying that he was, which was like waking up to Christmas morning for me that day. But, like, nobody, like, that was a pipe dream for me. And then when it came out that he was coming, it was just like, well, nobody expected that except for the people in the building making the calls.
And in fact, a couple days before, a report came out from Pro Football Talk saying that it looked like the Giants were going to sign Norwell and the 49ers were the other serious team, but no mention of Jacksonville whatsoever.
Like, the only guard I thought we were going to be getting was Justin Pugh. And even Justin Pugh thought he was coming to Jacksonville. He was, like, hurt that we didn't pursue him with the amount of former Giants staff that we have, that he wasn't a Jaguar. So that's just how secretive this organization can be.
Definitely. And that's what gives me pause. I certainly believe it can happen. I think there's a solid chance that it will happen with the connections here, the need here, Foles being a former Super Bowl MVP quarterback. Like, he's one of the best options they have for what that's worth. So I'm not trying to discredit the idea of it happening. All I'm saying is I do think we should pump the brakes. If anyone's noticed how I've addressed the story, I haven't written anything on yet. I haven't confirmed it. I haven't said that this is definitely a report. I'm saying, let's see if this holds true, because there's reasons to be skeptical. But if this is going to happen, this is going to be a franchise-altering move. This will drastically change how the Jaguars could approach the draft if this is what they end up doing, because for the longest time we've thought they'll probably want to draft a quarterback. But, you know, what do we think Nick Foles would look like in black and teal? Do we think he'll be good? Do we think he'll just be average? Do we think this is a bad idea? We'll discuss that when we come back from this short break. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835, or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835. And www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through North Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So BDN, I know Chris is a fan of BDN. If the Jaguars signed him to... Let's call it, I don't want to say a deal we like, because I know we want it to be cheaper, like in the 15 to 16 million range, so it isn't too cap crippling. But I'm not expecting that. If he were to sign around the Bortles deal, 3 years, 54 to 57 million, so it's in that $18 to $19 million a year range, what would your immediate thoughts be, Chris?
I can get behind that number. I think that's a very manageable number. Especially, I mean, you'll be taking the debt this year and cap, it'll hurt, but obviously next year and after that, you won't have the Bortles deal on the books anymore. I think that's a manageable number, but my only thing with if you're signing Foles is you can't be done at the quarterback spot. I don't think Foles is a permanent answer. I think he is a good bridge if you need him to be, because you're looking at his numbers. He is average to above average at best. He's not elite, and he's not bad. His lows have never been as low as Blake Bortles, and his highs have also not been as high as Blake Bortles, if you're going from kind of a statistical standpoint. And really, Bortles' only high was that Patriots game. But
right.
Per PFF, Foles is like a 77 rating. And out of all the quarterbacks in the NFL last year, that puts him at 21st. Which
his, so he's just about average.
Which we as Jags fans for the past season and a half is really all we've wished for. Obviously, we want that elite quarterback, that good quarterback. But average with the team that you have in place right now, I think an average to above average quarterback, which I think with DeFilippo and Foles, because if you go back to it, DeFilippo and Foles, that was never the option. It was always Wentz and then Foles. I think if you give DeFilippo and Foles an entire offseason for him to make a game plan that will work with Foles, plus with the emerging weapons like Dede Westbrook, Marquise Lee hopefully coming back, DJ Chark, I think he can build a really strong game plan around Nick Foles. And it wouldn't surprise me if Nick Foles had one of his best career years in Jacksonville, being that he has an offensive coordinator that when he needed to lean on Foles, he won. They won a Super Bowl together because of it. And I think if you can give Foles that kind of time and that rapport with DeFilippo to make a game plan that will work, it wouldn't surprise me if they had career years. And I think that's what they would be banking on in getting Foles. But I still think you need to get another backup option, because Foles will be 31 this year, but you still need to get a guy. Because if Foles doesn't work out, you're back to square zero. And you're 3 years further in to a contract where you probably have a much less, your team isn't as good as what it is right now.
Now, that's one thing that people aren't realizing. Like, yeah, everyone likes to draw the connection to DeFilippo, and some people honestly think it's a bit lazy. But I'm not willing to doubt DeFilippo's work with quarterbacks in the past, because I don't think he's had a bad year at all in the passing game with any quarterback he's worked at with as either a QB coach or an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Derek Carr saw some highs with DeFilippo on staff. Josh McCown, at 36 years old, had one of the most efficient years of his career before suffering an injury in Cleveland. Obviously, Carson Wentz saw just dramatic improvement from his rookie year, where people were already viewing him as a bust. In his second year, the first one he had with DeFilippo, suddenly things, or maybe it was his second year with DeFilippo, but working with him, just a big change. And then Foles coming in, another, you know, he resurrected his career after he had bounced around the league as a backup and looked like his career really didn't have much left going for it. And then Kirk Cousins last year. Yeah, that Vikings team wasn't that great in comparison to years past. Yeah, they didn't typically, you know, utilize the run game that well. Kirk Cousins has never been viewed as some great quarterback. And yet Kirk Cousins had one of the most efficient seasons in NFL history as a passer. Like, I'm not necessarily thinking, you know, John DeFilippo is going to turn Nick Foles into a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, but I think he can take an average quarterback and make and polish them off and make them look pretty good. So I don't think Foles is a game changer. I don't think he's going to win this team much in the long run, but pairing him with DeFilippo and, like you said, giving them that time to truly build something could end up being better than people are giving it credit for. I don't think it'd be great. I still would rather have a Dwayne Haskins, mm-hmm. so you're paying less money and have a lot more potential in a franchise QB than a 30-year-old Foles, but I think that it will be better than people are giving it credit for.
Nick Foles is the Jaguars' safest option, but he's by far not their most promising option.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
I think with Foles, you have the ceiling and floor are almost dead even, whereas obviously with a guy like Haskins, a rookie, your floor is going to be lower, but your ceiling is going to be drastically higher. Same with Tyrod Taylors, guys like that. I think Foles gives you the highest floor and not highest ceiling, obviously, but what you see is what you get with Foles. Whereas Haskins, you obviously, he could either fail or succeed. But Foles, I think when you buy into that, you know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who last year, granted, was only 5 games played, had the second highest completion percentage in the league. So I think that's probably the sentence. I think that's the phrase people need to really kind of grasp onto is Foles is their most safe option, whereas any other option or a rookie will give you more promise.
Now, in our next segment, we have some questions from Twitter about if they sign Foles, what's next? Obviously, they're going to want to add weapons on offense, and we're going to talk about that. We're not going to discuss any guys we think they should add right now because we're going to leave that for the next segment. But the last question I'll ask you is, who do you think on this roster right now would benefit the most from Foles being here? And vice versa, who do you think would help Foles out the most of any weapon that they have on this roster right now?
Who it would help the most? I don't want to be broad and be like the entire offense. I think Nick Foles... I was gonna say Leonard Fournette, but Leonard Fournette, I don't know how he fits into a Foles passing offense. Foles is shotgun heavy, and Leonard needs kind of that running start from the eye. So I am probably going to say, Nick Foles. I think that's going to be my answer for both. It's going to help Didi the most, and Didi is going to help Nick Foles the most. I think that's a pretty good answer and a pretty good assumption on how we saw Didi trending up at the end of the year with Blake Bortles and Cody Kessler at quarterback, to where now Didi's going to have a guy that will accurately put the ball in his hands most of the time, and vice versa. Foles is going to have an option in Didi, who has shown some grit. He took a lot of slammings last year, a lot of beatings. But is also progressing and growing as a player, especially in DeFilippo's offense, where you know he's going to get the ball in his hands in a lot of different types of ways.
I think Didi is a better version of Nelson Agholor mm-hmm. in the style of his play. And I think I don't think Aguilar is that great, but I think he and Foles had a, you know, a solid connection in his time in Philly when Foles, you know, made 8 career regular season starts with this Eagles team and some in the postseason as well. As a possession style guy with some speed that can play the field, and you might see Dee's role expand there, I think he's got the potential to be a much better version of Aguilar for this offense, in which case, yeah, I think that he's I think it goes both ways that Dee will become, you know, a favorite of Foles if Foles ends up being the guy here. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some options throughout the rest of this offseason, how this team should get built up if Nick Foles is the Jaguars starting quarterback for 2019. And we answer your questions on our next segment after these messages. So we got a couple of questions from our listeners for this episode specifically. I phrased it as, you know, ask us your questions about Nick Foles and his fit with the Jaguars if this all ends up happening. And the first one we got was from Young1887881. Who now should the Jaguars draft at 7th overall? Well, I think there's a couple of options here. I'm actually going to write about it so we can go a bit more in depth with it. Keep your eyes peeled for that. As soon as the Jaguars sign Nick Foles, if that's what happens, is when I'm going to post that. But no matter what whoever they would take at 7 or if they trade back, you will never convince me that they should use that pick on a defensive player unless, by the grace of God, all offensive players worth taking are taken in the first 6 picks, and therefore Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams fell to the 7th
pick. I was going to say, I was like, if Quinnen and Bosa are there at 7, it's hard for me not to take best available player there.
But the thing is that the only way that's happening is if offensive players are going.
Which means all of your other viable options are gone.
Yeah, and there's no way either of them fall that far. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of those guys make it out of the top 3 unless somehow some like 2 teams trade up into the top 3 for quarterbacks, which isn't going to happen. What I'm saying is that you would have to go like to the 0.001% odds of this stuff happening for Bosa or Williams to be available for the Jaguars and for it to make sense to take them. And otherwise, there is no defensive player you should take there, because that defensive player will be a backup on likely the strongest aspect of the Jaguars team, whether it be the defensive line for a rotational pass rusher to back up Yannick in Dante Fowler's role. That's not worth the 7th overall pick in any draft ever. Or someone to be the heir to Calais Campbell. That might make a little bit more sense, but they tried to do that last year with Taven Bryan. He ended up becoming the heir to Malik Jackson, which is totally fine.
Which they should have drafted him to begin with to do
that. Yeah, I totally agree. I think he's much naturally 3-tech versus a 5-tech. But, again, that means you're drafting a backup when you have one of the absolute most dreadful offenses in the NFL, and there are definitely guys worth taking to put on your offense there at 7th overall. I don't care who it is. Like, it could be any position on offense, because you can't get any worse than where they were last year. You could just plug and play someone there that's an offensive player with the 7th overall pick and put them into this offense, and you'd see some form of improvement. So you won't see me vouching for any defender. I just don't get that logic, because you can't come away with it without saying, yeah, this guy's going to be a backup when this was the worst offense in the NFL last year.
Yeah, well, completely agree. And to answer the question, if Dwayne Haskins is there, I can't justify passing up on another quarterback in that position. You passed up on Deshaun Watson for Leonard Fournette, which I just won't even go on that tangent, but we all know how I feel about that. You passed on a lot of good quarterbacks in that draft, actually. Your franchise is probably different if you don't go Fournette at that pick. But Dwayne Haskins, if he's there, if they sign Nick Foles, I think that basically guarantees the Jags don't trade up for Haskins, but I still think it leaves the door wide open for if he falls, then they'll take him. I think
and that's because we both know they really like him. And I get the argument someone's going to say is, well, you just said don't draft a backup on defense, but this is a little bit different. This is a position that the Jaguars have never had a star at. Nick Foles, like, we're looking at this as like probably a 2-year deal max. So like Dave Caldwell said it. He wants to approach the quarterback position as a big picture approach. And signing Foles for a 3-year deal is not a big picture approach.
Foles and Haskins is a very – I can completely get behind the rationale of that move. because you don't, you do know that your window is now, and some people don't like to talk about windows, but there is that risk in starting a rookie. Haskins shows a lot of promise, but some guys just aren't ready for the league. Look at Patrick Mahomes right now. He, everybody's like, well, he played great in, you know, this year as a first year as a starter, but he had an entire year to sit back and learn the game. And some guys need that. And if you rush the development, we saw a Blake Bortles, we saw a Blaine Gabbert. Granted, they might have just not been the option, whether they sat or anything. They were rushed into the job when they shouldn't have been. Whereas Nick Foles, unless the team starts 0-8, which is worst case scenario, nobody should want the Jags to fail early, because you do not want to rush Dwayne Haskins' development. So I think that is probably the smartest thing, going Foles and Haskins, because you get that guy who you're probably going to commit to for at least this year, hopefully through thick and thin. I don't care. Once the season's lost, I don't want to try the rookie out. I just want to continue with Nick Foles because you're paying him all this money, and just continue to let Dwayne Haskins develop.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that drafting a quarterback with Foles here is totally different than drafting a backup on the strongest unit on your team. So I would get behind that so much more than drafting a defensive player. Like I said, you'll never hear me saying that. But if I'm the Jaguars in that case, like, as much as I think it should be Haskins, like, I'm not sure, you know, how much I buy it, especially, like, I don't see them trading up, like you said, in which case TJ Hawkinson makes sense. I personally would try and trade back a couple picks, because I don't see any real threat to anyone taking Hawkinson other than Green Bay with, I think, the 12th overall pick. So you tried to trade back some, let someone come up and get a marquee defensive player. You probably get a day two pick, maybe a second round pick out of it, and land Hawkinson, who Foles targeted tight ends on 33% of his snaps last year over the past 2 years in 8 regular season starts. There were so many times where you'd look through stat sheets and see Zach Ertz had 10 plus targets a game that it blew your mind. And rookie tight ends, like, I get, for the most part, a lot of them don't contribute that early, but it depends on the type you're getting. If you're going on a project guy, then sure, you might not see it as much. Hawkinson is viewed as like the safest tight end prospect we've seen in years. You know what you're getting, and you know there's room for so much more. People compare him to George Kittle, who made a nice impact in his rookie season, and it exploded in his second. Comes in and contributes nearly like a sixth offensive lineman as a guy that can line up in line as well as move around the backfield and block for the run game, which they so desperately need. And a guy that can make a big contribution in the pass game. And last year we saw that in Philadelphia with Dallas Goedert. They took him in the second round, backing up arguably a top three, or I'd say definitely a top three tight end in the NFL, and Zach Ertz. He still had 33 receptions for nearly 350 yards and 4 touchdowns as a backup. So those guys can definitely contribute. It just depends on the prospect you're getting. And I think Hawkinson's definitely that style of prospect. So in an ideal world, if you're not going quarterback at 7, especially if Haskins isn't there, you try and trade back to like 10 or 11, let those guys come up and nab a guy that they truly think will be a marquee defensive player, or if they want DK Metcalf or whoever. I just think defense would be more likely there, and land Hawkinson there in an extra second to keep building that offense, or maybe then start talking about that rotational pass rusher or something like that. I think that makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I mean, and, yeah. I know you're a Hawkinson fan as well, because you like Kittle, and I think that's a really easy comp.
Yeah. Wow. I'll always be salty about that comp, because it was always the, why get a Kittle replacement when you could just have Kittle? But eventually that pain will die. But
yeah, especially if we land Hawkinson and Hawkinson plays great, then I think you'd be pretty happy.
Especially with an offensive coordinator who I think would be able to utilize a Hawkinson compared to years past. I've often said, if George Kittle was on the Jaguars, I don't think he emerges this early as he has with Shanahan, because Shanahan's an offensive genius, and you know, the Jaguars probably threw the tight ends like 25 times last year. So
right, yeah, for sure. From our buddy John, JMBA Gay, besides Nick Foles, who are other free agent signings the Jaguars should make? Well, it depends on what the cost of Foles is and how much they free up in cap space, because you do have to keep about $10 to $15 million put aside for rookie picks and for, you know, in-season moves. So assume they get to $49 million like we projected on that cap space pod. Do Foles and so put that money
minus,
aside.
Just
do
minus
Foles.
20.
Let's do 18 just because that's where we think it would probably happen. I think that's the bar. 18, so 20, so 33. So you're still left with about $16 million in cap space. The thing is, I don't know who really moves the needle in free agency at this point unless
Le'Veon
some
Bell.
Guys start getting released. I mean, sure, Le'Veon Bell, but I don't think that'll happen. I don't think they'd go out and pay him and Foles. But maybe Golden Tate. Golden Tate started to come around. I thought Tate started to come around a good bit when Foles entered the fold. He was a little rough to start with the Eagles. There is reported interest in a guy like Jesse James at tight end because they have to redo the position. I draft a guy or two as well as signing James because, as I said on another episode, like their tight ends for 2019 as things stand are Ben Koyak, who they cut in training camp and only brought back because of injuries, and Farrah McKeever, who's a rookie converted wide receiver who's never spent a single second off of the practice squad. So
if the Jags,
as long as Jesse James isn't overly expensive.
If the Jags get Golden Tate, they'll literally just have like the same receiver like across the entire dynamic across the middle type guys.
Yeah, for sure. But I just don't think that there's a ton of viable options that you'd go out and pay for to really fix this. To fix this offense, but there's definitely some guys that can come in
the offensive line. The offensive line is basically there. You just need to replace two positions, and there's not really anybody in free agency that, because they're at a point where it seems like the Jags have spent a lot of money in free agency, but now they have. If Parnell is gone and Can is gone, then you are two-thirds homegrown talent, which that is the key. I feel like that is a very underrated aspect in building an NFL team, is having homegrown cheap, well, they're not cheap anymore, but homegrown offensive line talent. I think that's...
Yeah, I definitely agree.
If you're constantly pumping money into the O-line instead of, like, look at the Colts. Like, they're paying, like, nothing to their O-line because it's all homegrown elite talent. So I think that's a big thing. I think they definitely need a hit on a right guard and or right tackle. If they go with Will Richardson at right tackle, they need to hit that position because you need to have a strong O-line this year.
I definitely agree. Then from Joshua Walker, with Foles at the helm, build your ideal offseason around him via free agency in the draft. So we just hit free agency. If you had to pick between Tate at his cost or Jesse James at his cost, and I would put Tate at, like, because Philly's not really
I saw the report for Tate that he wants 10 to 14 a year.
That's not happening. I would bet a lot of money that that's not going to happen because he came around near the end with the Eagles, but not nearly enough to warrant that. The Eagles don't seem to want to re-sign him. He's definitely not the youngest player in the world. He's not old by any means, and I think you could get him on a nice 3-year deal, and he'll be productive throughout the majority of it. But I see him signing closer to 8 to 9 than I see him 10 to 14.
We'll see because Moncrief got $10 million last year. So
you make a fair point. All right, let's call it 10 for Tate and 7 for James. Who would you rather sign of the two?
10 for Tate or 7 for James?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this scenario, you have enough money for both if you really want to. But
I just figure they'd probably do one and not the other.
Because whatever you do here, I think, sets up the draft. If you get Jesse James, you're not drafting a tight end early, which they still should. They should, because Dave Flip loves two tight end sets. So,
well, I've got a take on that. If once we get to the draft part of this,
Jesse James is just—he's the guy. He has concussion problems, right? Is he the ones that is always knocked out with concussions?
I think he's had couple. I don't know how drastic it is, but I think he has had some. I think that's why they brought in Vance McDonald.
I don't know. I'm kind of leaning. I think Golden Tate. I would like to say Golden Tate would be absolutely dangerous in this offense, having so many versatile guys that can go across the middle that Flip would have an absolute field day scheming that up.
All right, so let's say that they sign Tate. Then in the draft, not going quarterback in the first round, how would you play out the first three rounds. They obviously have four picks in that: 7th overall, 38th, 69th, nice, and 98th from the Rams. How would you want to do that?
Are we staying put or are we trading back?
You could move back if you want to.
And then stockpile more picks. I'm going to say, for the sake of simplicity, that they stay put at all their picks. So at 7, I know a lot of people hate it, but man, taking Hockenson at this point, granted, you can't go and say like, oh, well, you don't know if he's going to pan out. If you were asked in the draft right now to drop a Rob Gronkowski in his prime or a Travis Kelce at 7, I think the average person says absolutely. So I'm going to say Hockenson or Fant. I'm growing on Fant. I think both are going to be excellent tight ends in the league. So I'll say either of the Iowa tight ends at 7. I'll say Hawk because I like him more. So Hawk at 7. So now your receiver room's basically done because you have DJ Chark, you have Marquise Lee, you have DD Westbrook, you have Golden Tate. 38, you probably, if there is a right guard, if Lindstrom is somehow there, probably lean that. In the third, I'm hoping a guy like Irv is there. Irv Smith. Because, right. Well, yeah, because we already said Golden Tate in free agency. But then you took Hawk at 7, so.
You probably go another tight end in, like, day 3 at that point if you got a 7th overall
one. Unless a guy fell. But at that point, I think I'd probably try going edge rusher if any of the guys fell. Or in my scenario in the 2nd round, if Ja'Kai Polite's there. I think he's fallen out of the 1st.
I don't think he is. I know people think that it was a really bad combine for him, but you can't knock his talent. And there are teams like Kansas City.
If he bombs his pro day, do you think he falls out of the 1st?
I don't know, man. And I don't see him. They pro days are typically made a little easier for, so I don't see him really bombing that. I don't think he gets past Kansas City at 29 with their transition to 043. Yeah, and the fact that they're trying to shop Justin Houston, like, he's not getting any younger even if they do keep him.
Yeah, that's fair.
D Ford has been playing well recently but has an inconsistent career.
They have a lot of holes. The Chiefs have, though. So if, like, one of those top secondary guys fall, but
maybe, but I think they're going to want that pass rush help.
Yeah. So, but then again, we've seen guys fall farther than we ever thought they would in the draft. So the draft is a very weird monster to try and figure out.
Right, for sure.
But yeah, so if you go Golden Tate, I think they probably go tight end, O-line as the priority in the first two rounds.
I think it could go two different ways if they have Foles in-house, and that's offensive line or tight end or maybe receiver, but I'm just going to stick with those two, and Hockenson or a guy like Jawan Taylor at right tackle at 7th overall. Let's assume it's Hockenson, then I agree with you. Probably guard, and I think Lindstrom is, if he's there, he's absolutely a pick at 38. Reisner, if he somehow fell, which I don't see happening at this point, there are guys like Eric McCoy, couple of different interior linemen that should be around there in that range that they would look at. In the 3rd round, maybe a receiver like DeMarcus Lodge, because he's would be a bit different than having a guy like Golden Tate. You hope that DJ Chark can expand into a deep threat or a sideline guy, but last year we saw him really try and work him as a possession guy. So maybe that's how they want to keep working with him and turn Lodge into more of a deep threat. Because if Lee doesn't return at full strength, I think he's gone after the 2nd year of his deal. So you might as well develop another guy kind of slowly with one of those 3rds. Mm-hmm. And then you start talking defense with one of the other 3rd round picks, whether it's a guy like Chase Winovich to come in and be a rotational pass rusher, or a defensive back to, like, a safety to provide depth at free safety, whether or not Gipps sticks around or not. That's when you really start talking it. Or if they do decide to go Taylor in the 1st round, Irv Smith is the size profile of Trey Burton. I still need to look at his testing results and compare them, but he is the perfect fit for an H-back tight end hybrid type of guy that you can move around. He plays with some power in the run game as a blocker that can work as a lead back out of the backfield, in line, all that type of stuff, as a fun short game receiver. The Trey Burton role that DeFilippo personally watched happen in Philadelphia, that is Irv Smith's bread and butter. And if they didn't go Hockenson at seven and instead went Taylor, I think that Irv would be a fantastic second round pick. But this definitely gives them options. They could go a couple different ways, just not defense. I don't see defense.
So while we were talking over the last few minutes, I've been on the Draft Network's mock draft machine. And right. So my first three picks have been TJ Hockenson at seven, Dalton Risner falls to 38,
mm-hmm.
and Daryl Henderson at 69. Ooh. And now I'm at 98 right now. And there's some players that are on the board right now that I'm not even going to mention because they obviously would not fall this far. Some names. We already have Golden Tate, but you mentioned Marquise Lee possibly being gone if he's not even healthy. So let's say Marquise Lee doesn't play again this year. That's another wide receiver hole. There is a guy named Terry McLaurin who's still on the board.
Right.
And J-Jaw falls. I don't think he falls.
Ooh, you take J-Jaw.
Yeah.
You take J-Jaw on a hot second.
Yeah.
That dude is a freaking is a special athlete at receiver.
I don't think he falls that far. I would take J-Jaw. I didn't even see him on the board. I would have taken him with the first third round pick if I would have seen him there. But so mock draft, you get Golden Tate in free agency. You get TJ Hockenson, Dalton Risner, Daryl Henderson, which you could swap the two in place to make it a little more realistic. So TJ Hockenson, Dalton Risner, J-Jaw, and Daryl Henderson.
I sign up for that in a heartbeat. We forgot to talk about running back as well, because I do think they'll be drafting at least one guy and maybe signing another. They're losing Yeldon. I don't think they bring Grant back either. Fournette's obviously a question mark.
You have Fournette as your only running back, I think, going into next year. I think at this point, I don't foresee him getting traded.
Of guys that you count on, because like Thomas Rawls and David Williams, like whatever.
Yeah. So
Henderson would be stupid fun, man. He's fun. He's electric.
So, yeah, sign me up for this draft. If you can even get half of this, if you can get me half of TJ Hockenson, Risner, Henderson, or J-Jaw, sign me up.
I'm all in. And I think that should just about do it for us here at Locked On Jaguars. Make sure to stick around. We're going to be doing a full combine recap throughout this week, as that is wrapping up today with the defensive backs doing their stuff. Some guys we like, some guys that had a bad combine. As more full stuff comes out, as long as it does, we'll be keeping some updates up for you guys. As for now, rate and review on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe. Check us out anywhere you can listen to podcasts. We are Locked On Jaguars, and we will catch up with you later.